This is not a test. This really is hour number three of Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Sean Kelly Dalton, Dr. Bill Kane with traffic. Buddy Jeff Poore joins us in just a second. But I do want to say this, because number one, first of all, this test that's going to run today, the presidential alert, it was first scheduled, I think, back in early August, and it's been delayed every time there's been a hurricane or something going on. So this is, I think, the third iteration of this attempted test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. So that's going to happen at 1:18 our time. So in hour number two of Midday Mobile, we'll be riding with this alert. So it'll be going off on your phone. Everybody reporting that it's going off on your phone. It'll also go over the air here on FM Talk 106.5 and radio stations everywhere, right? So those of us that are in terrestrial broadcast that use the airwaves will carry this. So and that's TV stations, that's radio stations. And just kind of add one little part to this to help maybe understand the story that just got rolled out by Westwood One there. They said a lawsuit that was filed in federal court last week is going to be heard in New York, attempting to keep FEMA and President Trump, they said, which I mean, it's FEMA, of course, this has been going on since 2006. Let's get into facts here. Since 2006, from FEMA, from putting out this emergency alert on the cell phone. In the suit, you've got three named here: J.B. Nicholas, Christine Rakowski, and Leanne Nikitovich. They're saying that this test will turn our phones into, quote, government-controlled loudspeakers.
Mm. Now hear this. All Blue Jackets report to the Deportation Center. I mean, they said it's going to turn the phones into loudspeakers, and they're moving to block it. Okay.
And let me point out that the alert system has been part of radio station, television stations for decades, right? Decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's moved to the cell phone status. And now they're saying, well, you know, they can't do it on cell phones. They didn't have a problem with radio and television, but they can't use it on the cell phones. So radio broadcasts through the air, TV broadcasts through the air, cell phones, did y'all know? Microwave transmission goes through the air. You know why there's all those towers everywhere? They are sending your voice when you're calling to say, hey, what's up? I don't know what you're doing. What are you doing? That's going through the air in a microwave. Therefore, it is the responsibility of the FCC. It is the province of the federal government, because the airwaves are owned by all people. They are leased certain channels by TV, radio, cell phones. So yes, the federal government can make it. Sorry, people bringing lawsuit in New York. I mean, they could have Googled this. They didn't have to go to school for broadcast. They could have Googled this and understand that the microwave transmission is the province of the federal government and the FCC.
So...
lose my mind with this stuff.
They have stated why it is they don't want it to happen. What's their backup plan?
I don't know. A drum circle, hacky sack, something like that. I don't know. But they say, again, the plaintiffs, quite, say they don't wish to receive text messages or messages of any kind on any topic or subject. Okay. Okay, I understand that. I don't want to get them either. But, there's ways you can turn those off on your phone, except for this one. You can't turn this off. But the same way is these messages go across radio stations, television stations, because the FCC owns the mechanism of delivery, as they do with cell phones as well. So
now this type of system, though, has been used previously, yes, but in different ways.
Yes.
So it's not like this is brand new.
Right.
Okay. I'm just making sure I understand. So what they could do is just put their phones down for the day and then come back to them.
I guess. I guess. I mean, but to say, I understand not wanting to get all these texts and mm-hmm. alerts and all that. But at the same time, saying that there's, you know, this can't be done because, no, it can be done. The feds control, unless you're going to change from Communications Act of 1934 on, if you're going to change that, then okay. Other than that, sit down and be quiet.
You read the fine print of that contract you signed.
Okay, let's get into it with our buddy Jeff Poore with Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, and a man that's spending windshield time all through the state of Alabama. Actually, you've been on the trail of whom this week? Were you around Governor Ivey?
Governor Ivey's coming to Mobile, up at her headquarters on Saturday. So, it's good to go to these things, get kind of the pulse of the people, and if there's any enthusiasm for this election, which in some places there are, and in some places not so much.
Okay, well, I want to ask you, based on the ad that was released by Governor Ivey earlier this week, I was talking about this yesterday with our mutual friend Todd Stacey, and I said, I thought that was brilliant. And I'm not one that gets on here and just rah-rah-rahs for,
somebody just to do it. I thought it was a very strong move. Number one, in the specific narrow race between her and Walt Maddox, but the bigger narrative of who's the party for women. You know, the Democrats have held sway on that for a long time. And here you have a woman who's the governor of the state of Alabama running for it again. And she's pointing out this narrative from back decades and decades ago. She was sitting at the governor's desk saying, this is the closest I'll ever get. Cut to shot with her sitting at the governor's desk now. I thought it was a well-done ad.
Yeah, and I'll say this about the Ivy campaign. They have the advantage sort of in the consultants and the people working the campaign. Obviously, she's raised the most money, but she's definitely hired the best people. And you could see this. The stuff they've done has been pretty smart. I mean, even, you know, you may not like the idea of her having one-liner responses about debates and stuff, but at least they are clever one-liners. And I think you could just tell the sort of the quality of the campaign is head and shoulders above a lot of the other things you're seeing out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking if, you know, what has been an undercurrent, framing Walt Maddox is basically, without saying it, is that, you know, I'm the younger person. I'm the new person for Alabama. Okay, Ivy's older. She's the old way for Alabama. You know, kind of making that compare and contrast old versus young. Now, in a very deft move here, whoever put it together, without having to come out and say it, they're going to say, you know, the party that has a woman running for the governor of the state of Alabama is the Republican Party, not the Democrats.
Right, and they knew they need to do that in a, you know, you can't play the woman card, sort of, so to speak, to a conservative audience and really make it, you got to be kind of, you don't need to be upfront about it, and I think that's the way they handled it.
Okay, well, I think it was good, and I'll play the audio again. I have a couple times already, so folks can hear it. So Governor Ivy opening up her campaign headquarters in Mobile on Saturday, and you're going to be there for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, very good. You'll be on the show with us on Friday as well. So let's get into the politics of Kavanaugh. Seems to dominate all the oxygen politically out there. And the president yesterday hops on Marine One, and then I guess I don't know if he then switched to what jet. I went to Pennsylvania and then went to Mississippi in the Jackson area and had this to say. Let's go with that cut.
They've been trying to destroy Judge Kavanaugh since the very first second he was announced, because they know Judge Kavanaugh will follow the Constitution as written. What he's going through, 36 years ago, this happened. I had one beer, right? I had one beer. Well, do you think it was? Nope, it was one beer. Oh, good. How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know.
All right. So when we come back, more from Jeff Poore on that as reaction. You know, President last week talking about being a credible witness here for Dr. Ford to what he was saying last night in South Haven, Mississippi. Coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Continuing our conversation with Jeff Poore. And Jeff, okay, so I played the clip in South Haven. Thank you. South Haven near Memphis, not near Jackson. So the president had a big turnout last night at that event. And I just judging by the cheers, now, of course, it's a high-graded audience that wants to come out and hear the president talk, but they seem to be really motivated by the Dems pushing back on Kavanaugh.
Right, so let's think about this. You know, like, the enthusiasm was, you know, all in the Democrats' column, as it traditionally is for the party that's not in power in a midterm after a presidential election. I think anything the Republicans could have done, I mean, they're just looking for any sort of way to light a spark under their base. You already got a fired up Democratic base. What is that? You know, how do you do that with the Republicans? This seems to be doing it. And now, you know, obviously, I don't think this was planned. I think they would add Kavanaugh confirmed, given their choice. But right now, that seems to be that. And that's where the intensity is. So it's, I think you're seeing two things. I think you're just seeing the natural tightening of the polls right now with these midterm candidates. But I also think this is kind of feeling that a little bit more than you would traditionally see in a midterm election. I think that it's a dangerous game the Democrats are playing with this. It was kind of a Hail Mary pass to throw up. Maybe you stall it's really, I mean, it's working as far as stalling Kavanaugh, but will it keep him from getting confirmed? I don't know. Either way, though, you are giving Republicans kind of a motivation to get out to the ballot box next month.
Well, that's kind of the angle that I think is interesting here. Obviously, it's a motivator for Democrats, and we've seen that. But you're saying that in wielding that weapon, it's also benefiting Republicans for getting people to maybe turn out.
Right. They polled this, and, you know, obviously, I think the overwhelming majority of Republicans want Kavanaugh confirmed. And it's not just kind of want it. They really want to see Kavanaugh confirmed.
Because of Kavanaugh or because of what it says politically? You know what I'm saying? Is it because of Kavanaugh or is it because support for Trump?
I think it's more like the societal thing. I think it's if people look at it on the Republican side and think, this isn't fair, or this could be my husband, this could be my son, this could be my father. They look at it in those terms, and they do think that there's some shenanigans going on here, and that's kind of why it's motivated them politically.
Well, you know, I would say this, is that no matter your party, you're going to always play to your base, right? But there's a way to do that and not drag a person who says that they're a sexual assault victim. Until these allegations are proven, at this point, she is described as a victim. And I think you're towing the line when you talk about how many women are voting, you know, in this upcoming election, and how their vote can be swayed. And you tow a line when you say, rah, 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 Kavanaugh is our guy. But then when you start talking about and questioning the judgment and questioning the actions and questioning the mental capacity of a woman who says that she's been a sexual victim, you very much could offend quite a large swath of people called women. And because we all have a mom, we all have sisters, cousins, you know, you name it. And I think you have to be very careful with that when it comes to the power of the female vote.
Sure, but if you look at the other side of the equation, is it a net positive or a net loss? Are you losing more women? Are you picking up more women at the ballot box? So I don't know. I think if this were a general election, it might be a different question. In midterm elections, it's about getting your voters out, and Republican women versus Democrat women that were, I think, are already motivated to vote. I think Republican women are looking at it kind of differently than that. I think that's what's motivating them. And I, you know, we can argue about the ethics and the morals and all that, but just from a pure what are people going to do human behavior standpoint, it looks like it's kind of working in the Republicans' favor.
Yeah, this is interesting because you've got maybe this goes back to what we've talked about. As so many people are decided anymore, the politics of the undecided voter is really not significant at this point. And especially, like you said, in a midterm, this idea of, I mean, people are going to decide. Heck, you can look at it represented in Washington. People ask questions, act like they're going through the motions, but pretty much everybody from the just based on politics has decided, you know, who they support and who they don't support. So this idea that you're going to lose people or gain people, maybe it needs to be, like you're saying, more of an idea of how do you rally those people that have already decided just to make sure that they're there in November and vote.
Yeah, I think most people, you know, in a midterm election, it's not a high turnout event like a presidential election. It's not on every channel. It's not part of pop culture like a presidential election. It's a midterm election. So you have your really engaged and you're really super sensitized audience, right? The way I look at it is that's why you make it more of a base play and instead of an undecided play. Now, if we're talking about the I-4 corridor, if we're talking about Bucks County, Pennsylvania, sure, there's probably some undecided voters. But for the most part, people that participate in midterm elections pretty much know where they are right on politics, Republican or Democrat.
It's just will they show up or not. I want to ask you, you mentioned here that maybe some more October surprises heading out before the midterms. What about the New York Times story? What about this tax thing for Donald Trump all those years ago? I've had a bunch of people ask me what I thought on the text line this morning, and I said I don't think it moves the needle anymore. I think it galvanizes people that are against Trump and doesn't make a hill of beans to people that support the president.
Yeah, and if you're going to run a hit piece on Donald Trump, 14,000-word piece in the New York Times, I mean, that's, you know, I applaud them for their thorough reporting, but that's not going to get the casual person. I don't know what I think of Republicans or Democrats really to really look at things really hard. So I think there'll be more of that, but I suspect that you're right when it comes to people are sort of galvanized. They're at their battle stations. They're raring to go, and they are not, you know, this is not going to make them change sides.
I think no matter if you're for or against the president, you know, his Twitter skills are just out of this world, and he will get the last say. He will have the last say on all of these items that are making our headlines. And again, going back to what we were talking about in Mississippi, I just my question is can't you be pro someone and not anti another? Because his base is so strong. Those who are for, you know, Kavanaugh, they seem to be more for Kavanaugh.
Well, I think that's what we're saying now is this is, if you didn't have, and this is my, y'all can comment one way or another, but my feeling is if you hadn't had the Democrat attack on Kavanaugh, this pushback, there you would have people that support the president, but they may have something else to do in November, not show up to vote. Now there's an emblem, there's a rallying cry to make sure that they're there to defend what they consider the overall agenda of the president. And like you said, Jeff, this social discussion going on as well.
Yeah, well, here's one thing I would say about this, though. When they focus poll this stuff and focus group it, and they show Lindsey Graham giving his, you know, his fight back, and they show Brett Kavanaugh, it causes Democrats dips, really low approval. But you see a spike in Republican, and you see in these focus groups, there's something to that. Now, I don't honestly believe Trump is really looking at stuff like that, but his instincts are probably telling him this. People vote for Trump. A lot of people vote for Trump, that is, because he's a guy that punches back, and I just think that's a little bit of what we saw last night.
All right, let's bring it back home to Alabama. We mentioned it at the beginning here with Governor Ivey and the opening of the office here on Saturday. Saw one poll. It was a NBC SurveyMonkey poll that had Ivey 51%. I'm off the top of my head. I think Ivey 51% had Maddox like at 26% and 22% undecided or something like that. You're saying that the election was held tomorrow. You think Governor Ivey wins by 17?
Yeah, and that's just kind of a number I pulled out of nowhere. But it splits the difference between 15 to 20.
Okay.
You know, you've seen some polls out there that are like 20 points. I think those are outliers. I think these things will tighten up. I think the Maddox campaign will get their voters out, at least more than they would get out if the election were tomorrow. I think there's some stuff they're going to do. I don't think there's any October surprises per se. They may try that, or there may be a super PAC, a Highway 31 type of PAC that tries something. But I don't think it's going to be enough for Maddox to win. So, yeah, he's just getting underway with his bus tour. He's doing some things that may make that margin a little smaller, but she's not just sitting and hiding. She is going places. She's doing, you know, 3-4 appearances a day. Some aren't campaign rallies. Some are more like speeches to the Chamber of Commerce around the state and things like that. But it's such a tough hill for the Maddox campaign to climb, and I don't know where they need to get Republicans to come over and cross over. How do they do that? That to me, they're not really doing anything that would suggest that's the way they're going to go with it.
All right, I want to run through in the last minute and a half or so here places Democrats can make gains in these this midterm election here, or at least shorten the gap here for the Republican control. I mean, are there any actual chances here for Democrats?
So there's nothing really in the Mobile market and the Mobile DMA that your listeners may be, you know, kind of familiar with. There's three Senate races that when I talk to Republicans in the state, they say there's a Senate race up in District 10. That's around Gadsden. It's Craig Ford, who was the House majority or minority leader, is a Democrat. He went independent. He's running against Andrew Jones, who's a Republican. And this is the old Phil Williams seat. It was kind of he was part of the leadership in the state Senate. That's up around Gadsden. There's another one up around in northwest Alabama, Russellville, just south of the Shoals, the old Roger Bedford seat. Johnny McMorrow and Larry Stutz. Stutz has stumbled some as a state senator. I think he's vulnerable. There's a bunch of money going into that race. It's in northwest Alabama. That's one to keep an eye on. And finally, the one that's kind of interesting is in Lee County, part of Tallapoosa, part of Russell County, near Auburn. It's Tom Watley's seat. he's kind of facing difficulties right now because his district's changing. It's going more Democrat. With the growth of a college town, you have a lot of things. You have professors retiring and new ones coming in. You have students who might be more willing to vote for a Democrat. So you talk to Del Barris, state Senate pro tem. He says that he thinks that's the most vulnerable seat for Republicans. But other than that, there's some House races that are much more, you know, in depth. But just kind of big picture, I think those three Senate districts all spread around the state are really where Democrats could make some gains.
There we go. Jeff Poore, who's going to join us again on Midday Mobile on Friday when he's in town to see the opening of the campaign headquarters for Governor Kay Ivey. Remind folks they want to interact with you online. Where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poore.
All right, Jeff. Thank you, man. 8:30 FM Talk 106.5. Coming back, you know, today, National Coffee with a Cop Day. How much coffee do we have back there? Because I know
we got a fresh pot on the way.
Good, because we have a cop in studio. One of our friends right here, he's going to join us from MPD. We'll have coffee with a cop and you when we come back right here on Mobile Mornings.
Morning, 8:35 on FM Talk 106.5. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive, talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. I love live radio, buddy. I think it's a lost art.
Yeah, that's what's so great about live radio. We always do everything live right here. That's why I'm talking to you this morning, and I'm looking at the calendar. We are in the beginning of October, but as I understand it, some good deals still going on at McConnell Automotive.
Yeah, Dalton, we're really pumped. If anybody's out there been in the market for a vehicle, Dalton, for the last year, they need to act in the month October. We're calling it Oktoberfest, but what it really is we've got Yukons, we've got Sierras, we've got Acadias, all the best GMC stuff, even the new Terrain. And it's literally just a closeout deal, Dalton. So people are getting up to $12,000 off, let's say, a Z71. And so, just a month ago, you might have gotten $7,500 to $8,000 real dollars off. So these are $3,000 and $4,000 better than anything we've been doing all year. And so if anybody's in the market, you can explain to your wife or your husband why you went to McConnell is because Mitch McConnell told you you'd be crazy not to if you're in the market. And Dalton, all they got to do is go to McConnellAutomotive.com and check out these deals because we are pumped about how many we're selling now that we're giving them away like this.
That's some good stuff. We appreciate it, Mitch. Have a good one.
Take care, Dalton.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Right, 8:37, FM Talk 106.5, and it is, we mentioned National Coffee with a Cop Day, and don't hold this against him, my friend, but also corporal with the Mobile Police Department, Joey Goff, in studio. Hey, man.
Good morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So, yeah, let's talk about the Coffee with the Cop Day. I know that there's a chance for people, all of us, to get out right now this hour out of Bienville Square and say hello, have some coffee.
That's correct.
What are we going to, other than having coffee with y'all, what are we doing? What are we doing on this day?
Well, today I'm here to talk to you about our... I'm sorry.
No, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's Coffee with the Cop Day. So we sit down, we have coffee. Is just get to know you, get to know cops, get to talk. I mean, what are we going to accomplish with this day?
I guess when you sit down, you talk about any issue you might be having. Ask us questions about what we do.
Yeah.
You know, usually whenever people ask me a question, it's like, hey, if this happens, what should I do?
Right.
Or if this happens, what should I do?
Right. It's a chance. I mean, it's basically we get to have a Q&A with an officer.
Yes.
This situation?
And this is geared toward, obviously, the adults since the children are in school and in a non-confrontational situation because, unfortunately, a lot of times the community meets a police officer at the wrong time because something's going bad.
Right.
How much does this make your job even better and even easier, if that's the right term, when you've built that relationship with the community?
Well, I think it helps out a lot whenever I can portray myself as a positive member of the police department or my brother and sister police officers do. Because when people have an interaction with the police, it's either a good one or it's a bad one.
And so quite often on our worst day.
Correct.
Right? I mean, on the bigger things, I mean, when we call y'all, I mean, it is, we're having a bad day.
Yes.
You know, and I think it's great. I mean, obviously, you and I have known each other a long time. We're friends. But to let people know, not just you as a Mobile police officer or whatever law enforcement group it is, they get to know you as Joey, you know?
Correct.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. When you start knowing people as in whatever it is, but specifically, you know, talking about law enforcement, when you know somebody as just a human being, like, yeah, their job, they're law enforcement, but they're also somebody who likes to, you know, watch sports or go fishing or, you know, they're friends with some of my kin. That kind of stuff, I think, goes a long way.
Yeah, it kind of puts an actual person.
Yeah.
Instead of just looking at somebody that's in a position of authority or somebody that carries a gun and a badge.
Now, we're very familiar with this from a national standpoint, but you were explaining to us in the break the difference here for the city of Mobile. Explain that to everyone who's listening this morning. When it comes to whether or not this is just a Mobile thing, is it across the county? Is it a state day? You know, enjoying coffee with a cop?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
They're asking. they could ask you if you like drinking a beer in the evenings too. They're asking.
No comment.
There you go. Today National Coffee with the Cop Day, as. From your perspective, because I'll also hear, and I'll open up the text line for questions here at 343-0106. If you're sitting down with somebody and you're offering the first part of this Q&A, or you're talking to, what do you want to know from citizens? I mean, that's, you know, we're always saying what citizens want to know from law enforcement, but what do you want to know about the people that you're protecting?
I would ask them, you know, what do you need from me?
Okay.
Like, as a law enforcement officer, what do you need from me? And just kind of let them... Let me know what we need to do. What the patrol can do. What traffic can do.
I mean, obviously, public safety. You know, but people have, and I mean, y'all are, and this may be not the right term, but problem solvers too for a lot of people, right? I mean, hey, we've got a rash of this going on in our neighborhood, or we have, you know, I saw this going down behind my work, or something like that. Y'all are the outlet to get that. I got a problem. Right. I mean, yes. Y'all, we got a problem. We got a problem here. Hey, law enforcement, can you solve this problem?
That's exactly right. We have what's called the Next Door app.
Yeah.
That's one of the good things about.
And I see that. Now, quite often, Dalton and I are lampooning some of the things that show up on Next Door, the comedic things. You know, hey, there's been a cat in my yard 3 days in a row. Hopefully they're not calling you about that. But it is good that I follow that app, and you do see that. Number one, you see people going, hey, I see a pattern or something happened here. And then I see y'all with MPD answering back.
Yes, if we can't be everywhere at once.
Right.
So obviously if somebody sees something, we want them to notify us that right. There was a burglary in a certain neighborhood where somebody saw a particular car, put it out on the Next Door app. Somebody saw the car down the street and called the police, and I think they made an apprehension.
So that has worked. I mean, that kind of community information helps y'all.
Yes, it does.
What are some of the questions that people ask you when we do events like this? What are some of the questions that, you know, your neighbors, your citizens, or maybe people visiting in the city who say, there's a police officer at the park and I can ask a question? What do they ask?
There's a myriad of questions. I mean,
share some of them with us.
Do you get questions like, I mean, obviously you can get very narrow questions like, I have this situation very specifically, but when you look at general questions, I mean, is it how you do your job, how long your shift is? Is it questions about, you know, is this illegal or not illegal? I mean, what do you get?
I think one of the questions a lot of us get is, what should I do if I get stopped by the police officer? And that's what
okay,
I get.
That's a great one. That's a great one. That was, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about that situation where lights are on behind us. Now we're going to walk us through that. I'm asking you, we're sitting down, we're having coffee, and I'm asking you, what should I do?
Well, first of all, you just keep your hands where you can see them. That's the main thing. Whenever,
okay.
Whenever an officer is approaching the vehicle, everybody says a routine traffic stop.
Okay. We hear that all the time, right?
And there's nothing routine about it because okay. It can go from being a traffic violation for running a stop sign to all of a sudden somebody's trying to shoot you.
Right.
So just as long as you don't do anything that you're not supposed to do, don't go digging in your glove box, don't go digging under the seat.
Because a lot of people will think, oh, I need to get my license and registration ready for the officer so I can speed this process up, but that's not what we do.
That's correct. Pretty much if you get pulled over by a police officer, you should just keep your hands on the steering wheel.
Okay.
And when he comes up to talk to you, as long as any kind of interaction you have with law enforcement, it can go one of two ways from the get-go.
Right.
So if upon immediate contact with the police officer or citizen, if you're going to be rude to the police officer, you're going to be kind of combative, then that's kind of going to ramp up the police officer's course of action, what he has to do.
Right.
And if all you have to do is just pretty much follow the directions you're given by a police officer.
Right.
Hey, I stopped you for running a stop sign. Well, I didn't run the stop sign. Well, we're not going to have a, you know, we're not going to go to court.
This is not court. Right. That's the other part. And I often say that people get mad about a law or something like that. I said, wait a second. Y'all are law enforcement. Correct. If you're mad about the law, then that's something you deal with in the legislative branch.
Yes.
Now when there are community events like today where law enforcement get to meet with, you know, citizens, maybe not today particularly with it being coffee with a cop, but a lot of kids come out. I don't know how many kids are out there drinking coffee.
Let's hope very few.
Yeah,
they don't need any more energy.
For the teacher's sake before they head into school. But when kids come around and you get to have interactions with kids, I mean, what do you do? You hand over the handcuffs, let them hop in the front seat of the vehicle? I'm sure that helps. Out long term in the community to have kids come up and maybe even, you know, recruit them to become policemen one day.
Yes, usually it depends on the age of the kid. The younger kids, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, something like that, they're always, ooh, what's that? Ooh, is that a gun? Is that your handcuffs? Is that a baton? And you kind of explain to them, you know, what you're carrying on your belt or whatever you have at that time. But when the older kids, 10 to 13 to 14, they might actually have the questions about, you know, well, I saw this happen or I saw that happen. What should I do? Or so in situations like that, you just kind of tell them, hey, if A happens, you do B. If B happens, you do C. And just kind of give them a guideline for what they need to do as far as interaction with police officers.
Do you find you hear a lot of gratitude? And we know we lost Officer Justin Billa, and we've lost way too many officers, you know, over the years. Do you find that people just want to say thank you? Thank you for your service. Thank you for keeping us safe.
Yes, that is something that in the probably the past 4 or 5 years, we've been really been getting a lot of. Every time I go somewhere, I'm in uniform, so I say, hey, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. And I always tell them, thank you. It's my pleasure to serve you as a citizen of Mobile because I live here. You live here. I want everybody to be safe. I want everybody to, you know, be able to go about their life and not have to worry about somebody trying to do something to them.
How many years have you been on the police force?
23.
See, I knew you'd have to. I'm not saying he's old, but what? He's older than me.
And I know the two of you are friends, but I think it's important for our listeners who are listening and wondering, you know, about all that you put into, you know, putting on that uniform or what it means to you and what it means to our community. So we're very appreciative of all.
Thank you very much. That means a lot. And yesterday, I was at a restaurant, and a young lady, probably 18 or 19 years old, she came up and paid for my drink.
Oh.
And she, you know, she patted me on the back, said, thank you very much for your service, which, you know, that means a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, you know, there aren't many jobs where people are thanking you, especially in law enforcement, because sometimes we have to do things we don't want to do. I don't want to have to arrest people, you know, but if they break the law and they have to go to jail. But it's really nice to have somebody actually say, thank you very much, and, you know, buy me a drink, which is it really a big deal that they bought my drink? No, but it's just the fact that they went out of their way to show some extra appreciation.
All right, just joining us, talking to MPD Corporal Joey Goff, and I got a couple questions in here from folks. This one from Philip, he said, I have a question for Officer Goff. To report a crime, do we not always need a police officer, correct? Can we report the crime at the police station?
Yes, you can go to any of the four precincts, or there's technically five in the city of Mobile, or you can call the non-emergency line.
Okay, so they don't have to, they can report it to that line and not specifically talk to an officer.
It depends on what the severity of the crime is. If it's something, a property crime, or if it's something where...
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He said, you got a short list of items that we can report at the police station versus to an officer.
Right. It's you can use what we call teleserve, where you can actually, they'll let you take a report over the phone.
Okay, so that, you know, I mean, here I sit at 46, I didn't know that. I had no idea. So you can do that. I'll tell you what, we're coming right back. It's Coffee with a Cop Day, and we'll grab a few more questions as well from you and calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. Check in with News 5 and Dr. Bill coming up next. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you back. And on the website here, 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Following assault accusations and an investigation, do you believe Brett Kavanaugh will be confirmed to the Supreme Court? Let us know what you think, and we'll tally up those votes coming up on the midday show today. Also, it is National Coffee with Cop Day, and also a chance to talk about an event coming up, a motorcycle skills challenge. And Corporal Joey Goff from MPD in with us. I do want to, before we get into that, is it Glennie's? Is that the name?
Glennis.
Okay. Hey, Glennis in Mobile. Hey.
Hey. Hi. I just wanted to call in and compliment Joey. He has always been present at community events, and my children have come to know him and trust him and feel safe. And we'll show up somewhere and they'll say, oh, Joey's here. It's safe. I can go talk to him if there's a problem. And so that really represents a real community feeling and promotes just the good representation of the law enforcement community. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate him.
Well said, Glennis. And I'm seconding that as well.
Third.
Yeah, that's right. That's the link that people make. And her children, no, you're there. It's safe. That's important. It's real important. It's the work y'all do every day that lets people feel that way. I want to talk about too this event coming up on the is it the 20th?
It's the 19th and the 20th of October.
Okay, so what is you and I were talking about this yesterday? Motorcycle skills.
Yes, it's a police and civilian crew challenge.
Okay, so do tell. I'm intrigued now. How does this work?
Okay, what we've done is I'm the vice president of a nonprofit organization called Family of the Fallen.
Okay.
And that's an organization that back in February of last year, we decided to try to get a Mardi Gras float built to kind of represent the families of the fallen officers in Mobile.
Wow.
To let their families come down and ride in a parade during one of the Saturday or Sunday parades.
Wow.
And kind of let them know that the community has not forgotten about them.
Yeah.
So, and I think Kelly was talking earlier about Justin Bill. Justin Bill, when Justin was killed, there was a tremendous, tremendous outpouring of love and support, not just for Justin, but just for police in general.
Right.
So, after that happened, you know, we ended up trying to get this idea for the float, and then it kind of snowballed from a Mardi Gras organization to now we're a 501c3.
That's good, because so many times when, you know, people say, what can I do for the officers? What can I do? How can I help? And I go, you know, offer them your love and support. But now there's a specific charity.
Yes, it's called Family of the Fallen.
Okay.
Our website is familyofthefallen.org.
Okay.
And we also have a Family of the Fallen on Facebook.
Okay, and you have this event coming up 19th and 20th, where we're going to see some motorcycles showing off.
Well, it's not actually people showing off. It's going to have a motorcycle skills challenge. It's going to have three different categories. It's going to have novice, intermediate, and expert.
Okay,
and we're going to have two courses set up at the grounds, which is the old fairgrounds. And what we're going to do is a $25 registration. And once you get there, we're going to have a practice on Friday, and we're going to have the two courses set up. So you can come in on Friday, you can practice, run practice courses, and then on Saturday we're actually going to have the challenge.
Okay.
So this is open to...
You said novices.
It's open to anybody.
Okay. Is this course set up, I mean, y'all, as law enforcement, y'all setting this up, something kind of like you would learn at the academy, or is this...
Well, no, our motorcycle unit,
the
traffic unit, the guys that actually ride the motorcycles, they are very highly skilled individuals.
Right.
Because I'm sure everybody sees them during Mardi Gras with doing their serpentine. And
right.
But this is on like a grander scale.
But it's y'all setting up how this course will be the...
Yes, this course is actually set up by... it's set up by a motorcycle officer out of... Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay, so this is cool. We're getting to drive on a course set up by law enforcement. That's kind of, I think, the appeal going, okay, let me see how I can do.
Yeah, so we're going to have two courses set up, and then we're going to have it for the intermediate and the expert, and then we're going to have a novice course set up. So the novice course is, if you're somebody that rides a motorcycle and you're not really sure on what your skill set is, you can come in out, and we'll have instructors from the Mobile Police Department that will
be there.
I could use that.
I'd be one of your novices.
Corporal, do you ride?
No, I don't. I ride a bicycle, not a motorcycle.
If somebody wants to get signed up for this, how do they do it?
You can go to familyofthefallen.org.
Okay.
And you can sign up there, or you can find the link on our Facebook page.
All right. So sign up and then be out there for 19th is the preliminary
And yeah. And 20th, we're showing what we got.
That's correct. We're going to have
food, I like it.
We're going to have food trucks. We're going to have T-shirts. We're going to have raffle items.
Where's this going to be?
It's going to be at the grounds.
At the grounds.
At the corner of Ziegler and Cody.
Okay.
And then we're also going to have the canine from a couple of different departments going to be there, and they're going to give a canine demonstration on what their dogs are capable of doing.
Right,
Sean, so somebody, no evil Knievel for you.
No, I was just worried that he's going to recruit me to have the suit on and be the one the canines come after.
Well, we can do that, but you have to sign a waiver.
Yes, many waivers for that. All right, website again, Family of the Fallen.org, and on Facebook as well.
Family of the Fallen.
All right, Corporal Goff, my buddy Joey, thank you for coming in, man. All right, we'll put that website up and the link on our Facebook page so y'all can click there. And if you are a novice like me, in other words, barely knows his way around a motorcycle, or you're somebody who's got some chops and you want to test those against a course set up by law enforcement, you got a chance coming up here later this month. We'll talk about that more going forward. Laura Ingram Show on the way next.